It's SC Wild with Major Billy Downer from the Department of Natural Resources. Major Downer is here to answer your questions about the great outdoors. Call in now at 888-898-2525 and join SC Wild on the Sports Talk Media Network.
Okay, it's time for our biweekly get-together here on Sports Talk. SC Wild from the Department of Natural Resources, starring the good Major, Billy Downer, on a beautiful afternoon in the state of South Carolina. Boy, the outdoors people loving this weather, I would say. Maybe, I don't know, it's a combination of warm in the afternoon, a little chilly in the morning. Welcome in, Major. Great to have you with us. Before we dive into what you got for us tonight, and you got a great lineup, I had something for you because I was just down at Harbortown last weekend, last Thursday, Friday, for the Heritage. I spent some time on Hilton Head. It's always a wonderful place to visit. I mean, I know there's the tourist side of it, and there's the beach side and the restaurant side, but there's also that wilderness side of Hilton Head. I wanted to ask you about DNR and your involvement in the Hilton Head area, any involvement that you might have in helping out with the golf tournament, things like that. Do you guys do a whole lot with RBC Heritage? Do you do a lot of stuff down there in the Hilton Head area?
We have in the past provided some officers for assistance there. I think it hasn't been a whole lot of work we do there. So we're not heavily involved in that, no. We have had a few officers assigned in the past sometimes for some security, but that's about it.
What about that wilderness area, though? How about the wilderness area, though, in that low country area around Hilton Head?
The wilderness area around that low country area. There's wilderness everywhere, Phil. There's woods and waters everywhere. And there's deer hiding everywhere you can down there, so there's plenty of that.
Yeah, yeah. It's just such a beautiful part of South Carolina. You make that, I'm sure you've driven it. You come off 95, yep. Maybe you turn on to 462, make that drive back through there to Hilton Head. It's such a spectacular part of South Carolina.
That is my wife's favorite place, no doubt.
Really?
You say the words Hilton Head and a smile comes across her face, and she wants to go to the marsh. That's her favorite place. So, yes, I know that road very well.
Yep, yep.
Yes.
You have to watch yourself on that road, though, because the deer do hang out right there on the side
they
of the
do.
Road in certain areas. You got to be on your P's and Q's.
They do, but it's turkey season still. So I want to ramp us into turkeys for a minute because I know people are wondering, you know, how is the turkey season going for most people around the state? Well, looking at our hunter's toolbox that any of y'all can do, you can go to your hunter's toolbox on your app there at Go Outdoors SC. Go Outdoors SC on your App Store for Android or Apple devices. You can go there and look at the Hunter's Toolbox and look at the turkey season. Anybody can do this. Right now, the total take for turkeys right now is just over 8,219 for the season. Not sure how that compares in previous seasons. I think it's a little lower right now. The top county, the number one county in the state right now, with a total of 387 birds, is Williamsburg County, number two, slightly behind Orangeburg County at 379. And in third place would be Colleton County at 332. A little surprising there. Colleton at 332. So Florence not far off at 312. Excuse me. Horry County at 324. I did that last time. Made that mistake. Ori's in third. Caldwell and Florence are behind Horry. So Horry's in third place. That's a surprise to me. I just don't think of Horry County. You think of Myrtle Beach, Garden City. Think of the beaches. You don't think of turkeys. But that's the third. The top is in the top three areas of the state for turkeys. So been very good this year. But that is our turkey season report for now. We continue in our turkey season through May 3rd, for those that are wanting to hunt turkeys. Our season continues. Most people are out of that zone they call turkey timeout. We call it turkey timeout when you kill your first bird. You got to wait a few days, particularly if you kill them in the early part of the season, to allow the birds time to breed before you take another bird. So, again, the season a little different this year. Two birds is your limit. And that is the limit for South Carolina for this year. So that's kind of where we are. I haven't even had a chance to go but one time this year. It's a little bit different for me. The guys I work with at the office, a lot of them like to turkey hunt. They've been out a good bit taking time to do that. You know, our office is working hard, of course, to protect the turkeys out there in your neck of the woods. The main problems that we deal with turkeys, of course, always usually are taking birds over bait. And that's just unfair because the birds, you gather the birds up, makes it easier. You don't have to call. They're going to come into food every time. These birds are animals they need to feed too. And if you provide food for them, they're going to come into an area and it makes it easier for them to be taken. And that's just not fair. So that's why it's against the rules and against the law. Probably the most common violation when turkey hunting is forgetting to have your turkey tags with you. For whatever reason, people will forget that. And, you know, you can't have buckshot with you when you take turkeys. Now, in the old days, people would have buckshot with them so they could take a long shot at a bird. Well, that's kind of a mute point now with all the modern loads out there. They've got that TSS load that is just deadly all the way out to 70, 75 yards if you pattern your gun right. So kind of a mute point now with the loads, the modern loads is out there. They've done a lot of work with your wad, which is that plastic piece inside the shell that kind of holds the shot string together as it leaves the barrel. And it just they've really done a lot of work on these flight control wads to help that pattern hold together at a longer distance, keep them from spreading out, to put more pellets on the target at further distances. So, again, as I said, you know, in our first show talking about turkey season, you know, really need to work out there. Go out there and try to pattern your guns and know what your gun will do, how far a shot you can take, and how accurate it is. Some guns throw shells or throw shot a little left or right. It's just interesting how they do it, but you got to check your gun out. But, again, that used to be one of the big things was buckshot and not as big a deal anymore. You can still shoot lead shot with turkeys, so that's not a big deal. It's not a deal there like it is with migratory birds. And, you know, you can't shoot birds between – you know, you got to wait till after sunset, a sunrise, 30 minutes before, 30 minutes after sunset is your time that you can shoot birds. So, again, very, very, a little very different there. So, just some of the things you deal with. Yeah, I got a little fight going on behind me right here. I deal with
it. Well, have you been practicing your turkey calling? Do you have to practice? Do you have to stay sharp with that?
I don't have to practice turkey calling like you do duck calling because it doesn't take breath, doesn't take breathing. It's a slate call. You know, once you learn how to do it, you kind of know how to do it. Now, when you're in the woods, you always play a little bit with your call to see, you know, what might sound better. But that's not as big a deal. But, you know, springtime right now is the typical time we talk about turkeys, which is what we've been talking about. But one of the things tonight I wanted to talk about, something we've never done on the show before, I want to talk about fish pond management. And I know that we're going to bring in a good friend of mine, Brian Boylston from the department, to talk about that. Before we bring, as we lead him in, one of the things this time of year folks are doing is getting ready for fishing again. And fishing we talk about, you know, we give a fishing forecast, where to go on the lake, where to go, you know, what bite on the lake, brim, crappie, shell cracker, you know, striped bass. We talk about all that. We talk about offshore. But we don't talk a lot about fish and farm ponds. And a lot of people put a lot of energy into farm ponds, stocking their ponds, building ponds, stocking them with fish. And a lot of people don't really know what it takes to raise fish. So I wanted to ask Brian to come in tonight in the show to join us to kind of give us some tips on good sound pond management, because I learned some things in the last 2 weeks and he was one of the ones that helped me learn it. And maybe everybody out there knows this, but I didn't know it, so I want to share some of that knowledge that he shared with me. Do we have Brian on the phone yet?
We do.
All right, Brian, welcome into the show tonight.
Major Downer.
Yes, sir. Thank you for coming in. I want you, if you're introduce yourself, Brian is the hatchery manager at Styx, our Styx Fish Hatchery on Fish Hatchery Road. Been there for a lot of, Styx Fish Hatchery is very well known, been there a lot of years. Brian, how long do you have at DNR?
I've been here going on 14 years.
So, And your day-to-day duties are managing the fish hatchery at Styx. And what kind of fish are we raising there? Just real quick before we get into pond management.
Right now we've got restoration program for American shad. We've got striped bass out, bluegill, sunfish, red ear. And we've getting catfish in tomorrow.
All right. So a lot of people don't realize we raise striped bass in ponds, which is a pretty cool deal. How easy is that?
That is one of our easiest yet hardest things to do. They're here for a very short time, so we have to pack on a lot of mass very quickly. What we're trying to do is get them out in the, you know, get them up and get them out where they're able to get the natural food source when they actually need it.
Absolutely, which I think is pretty cool. People don't realize how much work goes into raising striped bass, and I know it's a lot of work. But, you know, maybe another show I'll get you in. We're going to talk about that a little bit more because I know people would be interested in that. But one of the things that I learned in the past 2 weeks that you were telling me about is just the different layers in fish ponds and how important algae is to the growth of brim, flatfish.
Well, it's actually the building block for all of your fish. So, you know, let's use a striped bass for example. So I spend an enormous time of the year just getting prepared for striped bass. So, you know, we're doing what I do. We're, you know, oh, well, you raise fish. Well, I don't really raise fish. I raise food for the fish. So it's farming at its base level. So, you know, I'm, you know, in the fall, getting into the winter, you know, we're liming, you know, amending the soils in the bottom of the ponds, as well as amending the water, just like a normal farmer would, putting that out on the fields. And, you know, of course, we're flooding it out to get that alkalinity hardness where we want it. And then we actually start fertilizing the water. And that is about the only input that I can give to those juvenile striped bass that we have out right now to actually provide the food source for
right.
them.
So, how does that work? Talk, because that was the thing that was so cool to me. So the fertilization of the pond allows for an algae bloom, correct?
It is a phytoplankton bloom, which is basically algae. Yes. So it's microscopic algae.
Right.
And that is the food source. It is. It turns it to a greenish color. And that is the base food source for zooplankton, little microscopic animals. And that is the food source that the striped bass are eating. So I have to make the food for the food that feeds the bass.
Got it. So the phytoplankton feeds the zooplankton, which feeds the striped bass. Did I get that right?
Correct.
Perfect.
Yep.
Is that the same thing in a farm pond for brim when they hatch?
It really is. Any farm pond, same thing. You have to have something in there for whatever fish are in there to, you know, that reproduce. They have to have something to eat. And it's the same thing. You know, small farm pond, you know, back years and years ago, when my grandfather was doing it, you know, he would have somebody from Clemson Extension come out and take a soil sample and, you know, recommend different liming rates and this, that, and the other. I know Clemson Extension still does that. And, you know, it's same basic thing that I do here on a big scale is the same thing that needs to happen and should happen in a normal farm pond.
Right.
At your house,
right.
Your small panfish, your bass, you know, everything in there needs a food source.
Right. So when those brim are hatched, when they hatch out, they are very small. They don't eat other fish. They're eating zooplankton.
They're eating the zooplankton. Correct.
Okay.
That's correct.
And
it will be somewhere between 30. Great.
No, yeah, it said they said you want it so that it is where that fish can sit still and turn around and eat off the smorgasbord. So he didn't have
pretty
to
much.
Look
that's the way. That's the way I have to do it. If they're swimming, they're eating.
Got it.
In a farm pond, you don't have to have it that rich. It's okay for the for the fish to be looking for a little bit of food. Again, I'm on a really tight timeline on when I have to do stuff, so mine's a little bit accelerated. But yeah, on a farm
easier
pond,
it is
you know,
for
you
them
want,
to find easier it is for them to find that food, the bigger they get quicker.
The bigger they're going to grow. The bigger and quicker they're going to grow. That's correct.
So that's a key point for someone trying to raise brim in a pond. You got to have a good fertilization rate so that you have a good algae bloom to create the food for the baby brim so they can get bigger.
Correct. And the easiest way to do that is go get a, you know, any white plate that you can find. Paper plate, doesn't matter. Put that plate about 18 inches under the water. You don't want to be able to see the plate. You want your water dark enough to where you can either barely see it or not at all.
Okay, cool.
And so that will actually
test.
Show you
white,
that.
The white that, paper plate test.
Yep, and that, in our world, that's, you know, we actually have a tool that does that, but that is the simplest way, is put something down there that you can see that's about 18 inches underwater, and you don't want to be able to see it.
All right, so let's go past that. When we start getting fish big enough that they can eat, is it best practice to feed them?
Well, that all depends on what you want. That's the biggest question. What do you want to do with the pond and what your target is? If you're, you know, good brim pond, yeah, throw some food out there. Get them responding to it, but you don't want that food to be its only food source. There is such a thing as overfeeding a farm pond. The reason is because you make them not necessarily dependent on it, but they train to it to the point where if you're going to go out there and fish it, well, they're looking for a pellet. They're not looking for your natural, you know, looking bait, you know, your worms, your crickets, or whatever you're fishing
with. Cricket. Yeah, right.
Right.
Cool.
So you don't want to go too far to where you got a bunch of, you know, really fat, you know, lethargic looking brim that are just, you know, pellet fed. Mm. You know, there's put enough to where they're, you know, you got a good response. But basically, whenever you throw the feed, you want them to be done feeding in less than 5 minutes. You don't want any feed left. Feed until they're done and then stop.
Gotcha.
Because you want them eating back.
All right, so let's talk about balance in a pond as far as the different species of fish that you want in a pond for a healthy basic pond. You know, you and I laughed about it. I don't want bass in my pond, so we're not going to talk about it tonight because I'm the weird guy that doesn't want bass. I understand that. But most people want
me and you both.
Yeah, they want a black bass in a pond. They want brim, and you know you've got to raise your brim first in the spring before you put in a brand new pond before you would put bass in, so the brim have time to get big enough that the bass can't eat them all. But another thing I was interested in, and you said this, what's your thoughts on mosquito fish, bullhead minnows?
Those are good alternate food sources when you don't have enough of a base in your pond, enough of a fish base in your pond to support your predators, such as, you know, predators. That's, you know, your catfish, your bass, your crappie, perch, you know, anything that is a predatory fish.
And my favorite,
you have to have
the
enough.
Mouth.
Right. The mo mouth.
The mo mouth. That's correct.
You gotta have your war mouth in there too. Those are all predators. So if you don't have enough of a base, enough of a sunfish base, you know, whatever you use as a base, sunfish is the most well, it's the most, that's what everybody generally starts with. Right. If you don't have enough of a base, you're going to have to amend with something, with another food source, such as gambusia or mosquito fish, or your different other minnows to put in there as a food source. Now, how you can get by that is if you're willing to wait, which most people aren't, is to give your brim pond a year. Give it a year to cycle, a year's worth of reproduction before you introduce your predators. That way you don't necessarily have to introduce alternate food source. Right. That way, it'll give it time to have enough of a biomass in there for your predators.
In other words, they'll get big enough to have lay eggs, hatch, get a full hatch, and now you got small fish for your predators to eat.
Right, because your brim is going to spawn, basically on your moon cycles. So every, 35 days, they're spawning throughout the temper, your warmer months of the year. They're spawning every 35 days. Sure. So something along with that is balance. Everything, nature loves balance. It deplores vacuums. So nature will always get you one way or another. So just like Billy, your pond, you're going to have to fish it. I see a lot of ponds to go to that are so out of balance because they wanted to set it up pure put and take because they have this dream of these
always
huge
catching
bass.
The big fish
and always right. So you need to be taking those fish out because that's how you get more fish, more robust fish, bigger fish, is by removing some of that biomass, because there's only so much fish you can pack into a pond before the fish know and will not, it stops and stunts their breeding. Too many fish in a barrel, they just won't make anymore. So recommendation is about 100 pounds per acre per year needs to come out. Everybody's like, oh, well, I don't know if I can do that. Call your buddies. Come out there. Have a good fish fry day, once or twice a year, and that's not that hard to do.
No, that's a good point to make, because you're right. Most people want a pond with good fish in it, so don't catch all the big fish, put them back. But if you don't remove fish, you don't have room for other fish. Excellent point.
Well, why not take the big fish? You got to have the small fish are going to become big fish, but they can't become big fish whenever the big fish are, the big fish in your mind are eating all the food and doesn't have any room for them to grow.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So if you were, we got about a minute left.
Yes, sir.
All right. With a minute left, Brian, what is, if you have one thing, it's your critical thing for ponds, most important above all else, is it fertilization? Is it balance? What is it to you? Number one thing in raising pond.
Go out more than once a year. Look at your pond. Look at it. You can look at it very easily and say, all right, I don't have – I'm missing something or I don't, quick 10-second look at a plate. Also balance, fish your pond. You have it, you spent the money for it, enjoy it and fish it.
Absolutely. That's a great word of advice. Hey, Brian, thanks for joining us tonight. A lot of good words, a lot of good information. We'll get you back. We'll talk more about striped bass rearing. I'd like to hear more about that. I know it's pretty cool, and a lot of people have a lot of interest in how we do that. But again, thanks for your knowledge tonight, sharing with us, and being a part of the show.
All right. Thanks, guys.
All right, Phil, that's going to wrap us up tonight for SC Wild, a little fish
Major,
day.
Fantastic. Is that kind of where we got the saying, fish in a barrel? Like you can shoot fish in a barrel? I heard him talking about
fish. That's correct. In a barrel. That's the old saying, fish in a barrel.
Fish in a barrel. Great stuff, sir, as always. You have a great couple of weeks. We'll talk to you in May, my friend. That is Major Billy Downer, Department of Natural Resources, SC Wild, here on Sports Talk. If you missed anything from tonight's show, it'll all be up in our podcast locations in just a little bit, and we'll see you tomorrow night.